Theravan Sannai, we are now getting ready to start the sermon for this week. Another program, another English sermon for our non-native Sinhala speakers out there, particularly. We do these programs always in the hope that this may benefit the non-Sinhala speaking audience all over the world, those who have a thirst to understand, to receive the Lord Buddha's Dhamma, to find solace, to find salvation from this samsaric process that is the rebirth cycle. How do we put an end to that? Enough is enough. We've been going round this circle time and time again, and yet today we still struggle to sustain this livelihood. We did that yesterday, the day before, last year. And I think, given that it's also the last day of this year, it's important as intelligent people to take time to reflect on what we have achieved. This is something you would normally do anyway, at your workplace, in your family. Hopefully people make some time to do this. And in various other contexts, to try and reflect on the year gone by. What were you able to achieve? What were your ambitions? What were your goals? And how did you fare against those goals and ambitions? What do you want to carry over to the following year? What do you want to do differently? What do you want to continue doing? What new habits do you want to start? What habits do you want to stop? What would you like to do better? So all of these are very valid, pertinent, important questions you have to ask yourself if you want to get somewhere. In the material world, we've always wanted to get somewhere, but getting somewhere has always been about earning more, building more, learning more, eating more, sleeping more, and it's always been a chase, it's always been a rat chase. When have we ever been satisfied? Think back, if you've been alive for the last 10 years, at the end of every year, over that period, did you not look back at the year gone by and think, good heavens, where did the year go? Did you not look back and think, I wanted to do this, I wanted to do X, Y, Z, but I was only able to do X, Y and Z still remain, therefore they need to be carried over to the following year. Perhaps you were more successful in some years and maybe not so much in other years, but ultimately, even today, you're looking to do something, you're looking to take something over to the following year and perhaps start something new the next year, and so on and so forth. Ultimately, we have to realize, we have to come to the realization that we keep building a world around ourselves, and we discussed how we create and define this world over the last two programs. We define the world as Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana. Rupa being material form, Vedana being feeling, Sanya being Vedana being feeling or perception, Sanya being the identification, recognition, Sankara formations, and Vijnana being consciousness. So that was one way we defined the world, and then last week we looked at the world as Apo, Tejo, Vayo, Patavi, Varna, Gandha, Rasa, Oja. So that was, how do you see the world as being something solid, something fluid, something warm or hot, you know, the heat element there, and something airy, and also the nutritional element, the color that an object possesses, the smell and the taste that any object would possess. And we also discussed, now you if you were able to join, then you'll remember that we discussed there are some things that we can't really perceive. For example, there are ultraviolet rays, there are ultrasounds. And the reason we can't perceive these is because our senses are not sensitive enough. Nevertheless, these things exist, and that was one way we defined the world. There's a fundamental problem with the world itself, and that is what we would try and look at today. Because in trying to set these goals and ambitions for the following year, you need to have yourself a yardstick. You need to have for yourself a way to relieve yourself when there will be times where the waters are rough. You know, as you sail on this ocean, remember we are trying to cross this ocean and stop, put an end to this samsara, but you still have to cross the ocean, and to do that your ship will have to travel the waters. It will have to sail the waters, and as you sail you will come across strong winds, you'll come across gales, you'll come across creatures from the sea who will try to destroy the ship, put a stop to your journey. And when these things happen, how do you respond? How do you prepare yourself to face these vicissitudes of life? That is what we will try and look at today. But before we begin, it's always important that we take a moment to reflect personally within our own minds the fact that the only reason we have this Dhamma today is because there was that special human being, the perfect one, the unequal one, the unsurpassable one, the unrivalable one, the perfect one, that was the Gautama Samma Sambuddha, who after many, many lives, many eons in samsara, realized Nibbana, attained Nibbana for himself. He gave us the Four Noble Truths and he taught us this is the only salvation you have. Understand life as it is. Don't be deluded. Receive the wisdom that you are all capable of. This knowledge, this Dhamma will give you that. And that will help you look through and penetrate the veil of ignorance. And once you do that, you will understand the world as it is. You'll understand that it's all a ball of fire. It's all an ocean of suffering. Some people might think this is just a lot of negative talk. Well, let's consider that perspective as well and see how negative one can be when we actually start to if we're talking about reality, is that really negative? But we'll discuss that as well. But before we do all that, let's pay homage to the Lord Buddha and seek his refuge to understand his Dhamma, to receive his Dhamma, and may his Dhamma help you all attain Nibbana in this birth itself.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
Let us also reflect on the fact that throughout our journey in samsara, there were many, infinite number of beings who we came across, who helped us in whichever way they could to get this far. The result of having been born human today is, of course, because of the good karmas that you and I have done. But remember that there will have been an infinite number of times when other beings, other people would have helped you get to where you are today. Perhaps there would have been a time when you were going to be attacked by someone, or for your sustenance you would have had to source some food. And when you were about to go and kill an animal to do that, someone else stepped in and said, "No, don't worry about it, let me go and do that for you. Let me go and fetch that food for you, whether that's by hook or by crook. And all you have to do is just take that food and be happy." And when they did that, ultimately, perhaps without any understanding of the Dhamma, what they did is actually jump into the fire on your behalf. So it's important then that the reason, it's important then that we reflect on the fact that the reason you and I are able to receive the Lord Buddha's Dhamma today, to understand his Dhamma, is because those countless beings helped us get here. There are also the Devas and the Brahmas who rejoice in the Dhamma. Nothing makes them happier than both listening to the Dhamma and also partaking in a ceremony or some kind of deshana, an occasion where there are people that are listening to Dhamma, and therefore let's invite them as well as all those past relations who we have come past, who have helped us. And as I make this invite you to extend that invitation to all those Devas and Brahmas and also any beings that you might have come across in samsara.
Samanta chakvalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammam munirajas sunantu saggamokkadam dhammasavana kalo ayam badanta dhammasavana kalo ayam badanta dhammasavana kalo ayam badanta.
Okay, so what is the problem with trying to build a world around us? We have defined a world, that is what we spend the last 2 weeks doing, and we very well and clearly know from our personal experience, you know, as I said at the start, look back at the last 10 years. What did you do as a young child, perhaps as a teenager, as a middle-aged person, or perhaps as an old person? What did you do trying to build a world around you over that period? Did you not go and research about the various options you had? How do I build this world? What does building a world really mean? What does success mean? Did you not go and speak to your friends, your family, your relations? What does success look like to them? Did you not look at society? Did you not watch television, read the newspapers, go on the internet, find out how did rich people become rich? How did successful businessmen or women get where they are today? How did the educated get to where they are today? I'm sure you would have done all of that, because I know this is what I did when I was a layperson. At the start of a year, at the end of another, I would always look at my past 12 months gone by, see where I am, see what I was able to accomplish, and then look at the following year and then set myself some targets, some goals, some ambitions. And in doing that, I always picked a role model. I picked a role model in the various avenues in life. So perhaps if it was in terms of, let's say, you want to become a millionaire and you're thinking of what is it that I can do next year to help me get there. So you then research about various millionaires, people who are rich, people who are successful in that way, and then look at their life stories. What did they do? Perhaps you might go along to a talk, a seminar, and they'll give you their experiences. They'll talk to you about that, their methodologies, the books they read, the programs that they went along to, and the behaviors that they incorporated into their lifestyle. And perhaps if you want to, it could be something as simple as, you know, you want to be a better gardener, and then you might go to a horticulturist, or perhaps your local garden center. Find out, you know, how do you engage in that particular hobby, perhaps, if that's what you're interested in? How do you find the right crops or the right plants? How do you look after them? How do you water them, and how do you put fertilizer? You know, all of those things. Or perhaps, you know, it's just you want to, perhaps next year is when you're taking one of your exams. It could be your O-levels, your A-levels, your scholarship exams, whatever the case might be. Generally, what you would do is go and speak to someone who would have done it at some point in their lives, and then you learn from both their mistakes and also what has worked for them. So in building a world around us, this is usually our source of information, and we generally take it as being a reliable source, because you get the practical aspect of it. You could read this in a book, you could watch this on TV, but nothing compares to actually going and speaking with someone and then following in their footsteps. Now, whenever you do that, people will generally tell you about the successful times that they had. They'll tell you, this is how hard I worked to achieve this. This is all of the hours that I had to put in. This is how much money I had to spend in buying this, that and the other, in investing this amount of money to achieve this particular gain. This is all the people I had to go and talk to themselves. You know, they'd give you that information if they're generous enough. And they would perhaps, you know, invite you to even join them in some of their ventures and say, why don't you come along and try your hand at it? You know, you're welcome to spend a few days with me, that sort of thing. So when you associate people of that type, and there's nothing wrong with that, they'll give you this information. Now, in relation to and in comparison to living a good life as a human being, all of that is great. As I said, these are all the things that I used to do. And there'll be people among you, listeners among you, who would have done the same, or perhaps who mentor other people. And this is probably what you would advise them to do as well. Nothing wrong with that. It's great if what you're trying to do is build a world around you. But when you begin to realize that, you know what, I've been doing this for the last 10 years. I've been doing this for the last 15, 20 years. And yet, today, at the end of another year, I'm setting myself new goals, new targets, new ambitions for the following year. And then you break that down into monthly targets, weekly targets, daily targets, and sometimes even hourly targets. This is how you would plan your day. And then you find out all the little things that you need to do to get that done. So when you associate that kind of person, people who are successful in a worldly sense, they'll give you all this information on how to be successful. But do they ever tell you that, hey, you know what, I have been successful as far as this conversation is concerned, but it's come to my mind lately that I'm not going to take any of these things with me. It's come to my mind late. Every year I set myself goals, and all I'm doing there is actually setting myself or giving myself more work to do to get to a certain place, to go traveling, to do things, to build something, to achieve something. And I'm actually feeling exhausted. So this is where, when someone actually comes along and says, aren't you exhausted? Aren't you tired of building every day? Aren't you tired of, you know, starting a business, investing more money? Aren't you tired of trying to construct this universe around you? Have you actually managed to find something that is immune from disease, death, disaster? And when they ask you these questions, you begin to ponder, you begin to ask yourself, well, actually, this is right. People have been doing all of these things for many, many years. And yet today, I'm setting myself new goals, new targets, new ambitions. When do I get the chance to stop this? When do I get the chance to actually do something once and then be content with that? Because otherwise, it's a constant rat race. I'm constantly running after something. Because think about it, why do we do all of these things? One would say, well, it's to survive. So what do you need to survive then? You need food, you need shelter, you need to be safe, you need somewhere to sleep. Well, shelter covers it pretty much. And you perhaps need a little bit of peace of mind. So if you have the basics and necessities, and some medicine if you're feeling ill, and of course clothing. So if you have the basic necessities, and that is what you need to survive, then everything else is extra. Everything else is beyond what you need to produce, what you need to gain. So when someone comes along and gives you that perspective, then it's easy for the world to turn around and say, well, actually, isn't that just being a bit negative? Why not do more if you can do more? Why not build a world around you if you can? Why not build a second house if you can? Well, yes, I've got my own house, I've got one house, I've got one car. Why not go and make another? Well, that's one argument. Yes, you could. But if you were to build a house where in an area that was prone to earthquakes, so imagine you're building a house, it's taken you 6 months to build that house, brick by brick, stone by stone, you've built that house, you've painted it, you know, you put in all the furniture, and it's looking great from inside and out. But guess what happens? Along comes an earthquake, and the entire house is turned into rubble and dust. And then you think to yourself, tough luck that was. That's okay. I've got more money because in that 6 months I still went and worked. So I've got more savings and I'm going to start building my house again. And then you build that house again. But guess what? You pick the same spot to build the house. So you build that house again. Not knowing though that another earthquake is about to hit. So a second earthquake comes along. And then you think, tough luck. I'm going to build again. And then you build again. Then along comes a tsunami or some other kind of natural disaster. And then you build again. And again. And again. Do you? Really? No, because if you have any sense of intelligence, then you're going to ask yourself, well, am I not building this house in the wrong place? So then you go looking for another place, a better place, where the ground is less prone to earthquakes, where there are less natural disasters, and where there's a better environment to build a house, right? Isn't this why people move homes? You know, they look at crime rates, for example. You know, say a young couple living together, they have a kid, now they want somewhere that's closer to a school, perhaps where there's less crime, and then they move. So you're constantly looking for a better place. Now, this guy who's building this house then decides, well, let me go somewhere else and build this house. So then they go somewhere else and start building. And unfortunately, this place is now prone to not earthquakes this time, but some other kind of natural disaster. Volcanoes. And then you are now, every time you finish building, there comes a volcano, and a volcano erupts. There's lava, and then your whole house burns down. Then you build another one there. And another one. And another one. Do you? No, you go somewhere else again. And you keep moving. You keep going elsewhere. You keep going somewhere else, trying to find this perfect place to build your house. Well, guess what? That's what we've always been doing in samsara. We've been to the heavens, all six of them. We've been to the Brahma worlds, all 20 of them. We're now in the human world, always trying to find the right place to build our home. But guess what? Along comes a tsunami. Along comes an earthquake. Along comes a hailstorm. A volcano erupts. These natural disasters are always coming. So you've got to then come to some sense where at some point in this cycle where you decide, hang on a second, every time I build something, Sometimes it's a few months, sometimes it's a few years, sometimes it's a few days, but all this comes falling down and it's just rubble and dust at the end of the day. So, do I keep building? When is enough? Enough. This is when the Lord Buddha comes along and says, well, guys, guess what? I've been thinking and I've realized that I've been doing exactly what you're doing all this time in samsara for an infinitely long time. And I've realized that whenever I built a house, it's always been struck by lightning or a tsunami's come along or some kind of disaster and it falls down. And then all my hard work, my labor, all the money I invested in it, all gone in vain. So I've decided, that's it. I'm going to stop doing this useless thing. There's no point in doing this. Because every time I build this, not only does it come crashing down and therefore that brings me an immense amount of pain, but also while it's still up and standing, I can't just leave it like that. Because yes, there are the natural disasters, but then there are also thieves who I've got to protect my home from. There's also the pain that goes funny shade every now and then, so I've got to paint it. Then there are little insects and I've got to protect my home from the elements, and also I've got to when there are times when the electricity stops working, when the water stops working, when the gas stops working, and all these times I have to get involved and fix these things. And when I had 5 bedrooms, I had to do this in all 5 of my bedrooms. But guess what? When I only had 1 bedroom, I didn't have that much work to do. And I also thought, I can only be in 1 bedroom at any one time. So therefore he gives us this really valuable point to think about. Clearly, using this metaphor, I'm talking about our life in samsara. So he asks us, you've been to the heavens, I've been to the heavens, I've been to the Brahma worlds, I've been to the human world, but most of the time I've actually spent in the hells. Because in trying to build this house, it's not always that I've only used material that I earned through right means. There were times when I went and robbed somebody. There are times when I saw some bricks laying around in my neighbor's garden and I thought, I'll just pick the right moment when he's looking away and I'll go and pack a bag full of them and bring them over. When I saw that there was someone else had a lot of money, I went and killed that person and took their money and then built my house. So I did all of these bad things trying to build my house. But unfortunately, every time I built it, it was only a matter of time when it all came rumbling down and was all just rubble and dust at the end of the day. So I've now decided, when I did all of those bad things, the consequences of that was me going to hell, and I spent an infinitely long time there burning in the fires. In fact, I think one of these days I want to talk to our listeners about this sutra called the Devaduta Sutra, translated to English, that is the heavenly messenger. It's the discourse that the Lord Buddha gives to his monks, where having seen the hells through his eyes, obviously not his physical eyes, but through his wisdom, he gives us in very vivid detail, this is what the hells are like. He therefore asks us the question, is this where you want to go? And he tells us, he warns us, if you do the bad deeds, the sins, if you do the dasa akusala, unfortunately, whether you like it or not, this is where you're going to end. And all of those things we just said, killing, stealing what's not yours, lying, slandering, backbiting, all of these things are bad things, all of these things are evil deeds. And the consequences of these things we don't realize, but they do come and bite us on the back. And when they do bite us on the back, they bite hard. And then we suffer. So, the problem with building these houses, and that is the problem with building anything, really, is that they intrinsically, any object has certain qualities, certain attributes. In Pali, we use the terms Sankata, Paticca Samuppanna, Kshayadhamma, Vayadhamma. And I'd like to describe what these terms mean in the context of anything that is conditioned. Anything that is conditioned has these qualities. So what do I mean by things that are conditioned? What do I mean by things that are conditioned? Everything but Nibbana is conditioned. Let's take a few examples. We discussed the example of where this man builds a house. A house is nothing but a series of conditions coming together and materializing to give this effect, that is the house. So, for instance, if you took a house at its most basic level, you've got four walls and a roof, and you have a house and perhaps a foundation. So if I asked you to bring me, or if I asked you to build me a house, what you're going to do is actually go and put down a foundation, you're going to build four walls around on top of it, and then you're going to put a roof over it, and you're going to say, sir, your house is ready. Okay, obviously there'll be things you'll do in addition to that, but this is the basic definition of what a house is. Now, if I asked you to go and example, if I asked you to go, I give you a piece of paper or a sticker, and I say, can you go and stick this on my house? You're going to have to ask me a question. What is the question you're going to have to ask me? Where? You're going to have to ask me, where would you like me to stick this? Well, I've told you, I want you to stick this on my house. And then you ask me, yes sir, but where do you want me to stick it? So you see, if a house is a single unit, and if I ask you to go and stick something on my house, then it should be obvious where you're going to stick this, because it's on my house. But it isn't obvious, is it? Why? Because the house is nothing but conditions coming together. It's nothing but a multitude of causes giving rise to this phenomenon that is a house. So you have the four walls, then the foundation, and perhaps you have a door, maybe some windows, and so on and so forth. So I'm going to have to tell you, actually go and stick it on the north facing wall, or the south facing wall, or the east facing wall, or the west facing wall. Or actually no, stick it on the main door, on the front door. Actually no, I changed my mind. Stick it on the back door, the rear door. Actually, you know what? Let's put it on the roof. So I'm being very specific now. And then when I give you that instruction, now you can go and do it. Unless you want to be smart or you want to be clever. And then you ask me, okay, so you say door. When you say door, where do you mean on the door? Are you talking about the handle? Are you talking about the lock of the door? Are you talking about the top half of the door, the bottom half of the door? Which bit of the door are you talking about? Well, I've just told you, stick it on the door. Now you're going to have to ask me, because if you stick it on the wrong place, I'm going to shout at you. I'm going to scold you and say, that's not where I asked you to stick. Well, you just said door, so I just assumed. Well, how can you assume? So you see, the house is nothing but causes giving you that effect. It's the four walls and the roof and the foundation. So you can't actually give me a house. All you can give me are the causes that give you that give that result that it's a house, right? Similarly, if I took another example, if I asked you to, I give you a bit of plaster, and I say, oh, actually, I give you a balm. So let's say you've got a headache. You've got a headache, and you've come to me asking for some medicine. And I say, well, I've got this balm that you need to apply, or this perhaps like they do in acupuncture. There's a series of needles, and you stick these needles on your body, and then that cures you. I've never tried it, but this is what I've heard. So with acupuncture, and I could be wrong, but this is what I've heard, there are certain areas on your body which correspond to other parts of your body. So perhaps if you, for example, if you have a headache, now I'm not a specialist in acupuncture, so this is not technically accurate, I don't think, but this is just an example. So for a headache, you would stick this needle between your first two toes. Example, okay? Therefore, if I ask you to, if I give you a needle and say, this is the treatment for your ailment, go and stick it on your body, you're going to have to ask me a question. You're going to have to ask me where. So you're going to have to ask me, and I'll just tell you, well, just stick it on your body. Then you're going to ask me, does it matter where? Can I stick it anywhere? Why are you asking me this question? Because there is no such thing as the body. You know, the body is just something that transpires. It's just something that we see within our minds, but a body doesn't actually exist. Why? Because you have your arms, your face, your eyes, your nose, your mouth, your ears, your chest, your stomach, your genitals, your legs, your feet, your nails, your toenails, your fingernails, your hair, your scalp. All of these things make up your body. So where's the body? It's nothing but the constituent parts coming together, compounded, give you this feeling that there's a body that's in front of you. This is why when I ask you to touch somebody, you know, put your arm out and touch your sister or your brother, I'm going to have to turn back and say, no, I didn't ask you to touch his arm. I didn't ask you to touch his face. I asked you to touch him. So you see, you can't do that. You're going to have to touch somewhere, and that's only going to be one part of that big puzzle. So, therefore, what these two examples will hopefully convey is that the result is nothing but causes coming together. So if you want to take the result somewhere, you're going to have to take the causes with you. Let's say you're looking at a fire. Some people, this is the favorite topic. You're looking at a fire, and I tell you, well, I ask you the question, why are you looking at the fire? Oh, well, don't you think it's quite nice? You know, it's a nice fireplace, and you can see how the flames are quite, you know, looking as if they're alive. I'd like to have a fireplace like this at my home, one might say. And then I'll tell you, well, why didn't you take some of that fire with you? Can you take some of that fire with you? If you tried to do that, the only thing you would do is to go and recreate this fire in your home. You're never going to be able to create exactly the same fire, but you're going to try to do something that is as close as possible to what you've observed and what you've liked. So what would you do? You would take some wood. You'd take some. You'd take something that is combustible, and you perhaps a matchbox, maybe some fuel. And then you'd light a fire. Now, all you're doing is actually just providing the causes that give you the effect that is the fire. You can't take the fire with you, but you can create the causes again that give you that result. But if the logs of wood are wet, for instance, that fire is never going to arise. You know, think about a time when you've picked up a matchbox and it's wet. And you're trying to light a fire, you're trying to light this matchstick, and you keep rubbing it against the side of the matchbox. And no matter what you do, it's not lighting. Why? Because you're not able to create the friction that is required. So if the causes aren't right, you're never, no matter how much you like, going to get the result that you want. This is why we say, we use the word anicca, to explain conditioned things around us. Anything that is conditioned will only be visible as that particular thing, that particular person, that particular incident, for as long as the conditions exist. A vehicle will only keep running for as long as a million different reasons to keep that vehicle running are in play, are in motion. As soon as the engine heats up, and there could be 100 different reasons why an engine could heat up. It could be because it's run out of water. It could be it's because, you know, some kind of valve has gone wrong. So again, you know, there could be many, many reasons. Why does a vehicle come to a stop? Perhaps, you know, it's got a puncture in one of its tires. Maybe the accelerator has stopped working. You know, now, I'm talking about a vehicle, but think about yourselves. You're only going to keep running for as long as all the reasons inside you as a human body, as a person, keep functioning. to that extent that keeps you alive. Okay? So, anything that is conditioned, have these characteristics, which is Sankata, Patisampanna, Shayadama, Vayadama. So let's discuss what these things mean. Sankata, Sankata, or Sankruta. Sang is the combination of avidya and trushna. Avidya is ignorance and trushna is attachment or tanha. Kruta is an action, is to do something. For example, you will have heard the word Sanskrita. So Sanskrit, it's a language. It's a language. Sanskrit is a language. The reason Sanskrit is called Sanskrit is because it's not a natural language. It's a language that was created. And so Sanskrita or Sankata is something that has been created. Created by what? By the causes that give rise to it. Now, I challenge you to think of any object that you can think of, any person that you can think of, absolutely any entity you can think of, that is not a Sankata, that is also not Nibbana. See, people sometimes ask me, why is Nibbana so good? Why, you know, what's so special about Nibbana? Why is it that you're all struggling to attain Nibbana? The reason for this is because Nibbana is not a Sankata. Nibbana is not conditioned. Because anything that is conditioned will only remain in that state for as long as the causes for that result are alive. We used several examples. But Nibbana itself is not the result of conditions. It's conditionless. So something that is not conditioned will be like that forever. But Nibbana is not a place, it's not somewhere like a holiday that you can go on. Some religions talk about a place as if there's a planet somewhere that you can go and, you know, there's going to be a happiness forever. For example, in the time of the Buddha, when he was a Bodhisattva, his teachers, Alara Kalama, Uddakarama Putta, you know, they were able to develop jhanas, and through those jhanas they were able to focus on immaterial worlds, arupavachara brahmaloka. And in these, some of these worlds, lifespan is about 84,000 mahakalpas. Remember, once we defined what a kalpa was, a kalpa. When the Buddha was asked, can you give a number as to how long a kalpa is, or an eon is what a kalpa is. And he said, well, I can't really give you a number, because numbers don't quite convey how large an eon is. But I can give you a metaphor. And he says, if you built a cuboid, a big box that was 16 kilometers long, 16 kilometers wide, 16 kilometers tall, and so this is a big box, and you fill it with mustard seeds, and then think every 100 years someone comes along and picks one of these mustard seeds and throws it outside of the box, the time it takes to empty that box is less than the length of time, than the duration of an eon. So imagine 84,000 of these times 20. In my head I can't compute that number. It's unfathomable. But this is the longest lifespan of these immaterial worlds. So we've been there, you know, and this is what Alara Kalama Uddakaram Putta, you know, this is what they said. Go to these worlds, because their lifespan is, you know, you live forever. And so happiness forever. You know, you're not subject to ailments, you're not subject to disease, death, because, you know, obviously you don't have a body, so you can't be subject to ailment. You can't be subject to diseases. And they thought that there was no death there either. But the Buddha was able to look past that, and he realized actually people who are born in these worlds also die, and then they could become animals. They could go into the hells. This is why he said that's useless as well. Okay? So anything that is conditioned therefore has the characteristics which is Sankata, Sankruta, sang being avidya trishna and kruta being coming together an action. Right? So we used a few examples to describe that. Now the problem with sankata, the problem with being a sankata, you know, it's like, what is the problem with hot water? There's nothing wrong with hot water unless you pour it over your head. You know, say boiling water. There's nothing wrong with it unless you pour it over your head, right? You know, it's just hot water. Sometimes, you know, people use it for all sorts of things. Perhaps you're feeling a bit cold, or maybe you want to boil a cup of tea. You know, you use boiling water for that. But what if you pour it over your head? Now that's doing a foolish thing. That's doing the wrong thing with it. So being sankata is not the problem. The problem is you don't go and attach to it. That is where Shradhama Vaidhamma comes, but I'll get to that. So sankata, and then the second characteristic is paticca-samuppanna. So paticca-samuppanna, so paticca-samuppada is dependent origination, as we have discussed in the past. Things don't just arise out of nowhere. Things don't fall out of the sky. Whether it's human beings, whether it's planets, whether it's this universe, or the tiniest microbe bacteria you can imagine. All of these are a result of paticca-samuppada, the paticca-samuppada process, the dependent origination process. Avidya paccaya sankara, sankara paccaya vinyana, vinyana paccaya namarupa, namarupa paccaya salayatana, salayatana paccaya passa, passa paccaya vedana, vedana paccaya tanha, tanha paccaya upadana, upadana paccaya bhava, bhava paccaya jati. And that in English, ignorance is the cause or gives rise to formations, sankara. Sankara paccaya vijnana is formations give rise to consciousness. Vijnana paccaya namarupa, consciousness gives rise to name and form. And name and form, namarupa paccaya salayatana, gives rise to the six sense doors. Salayatana paccaya passa, that gives rise to contact. Contact gives rise to feeling. Feeling gives rise to attachment, tanha. Tanha paccaya upadana, that gives rise to close association. Upadana paccaya bhava, that gives rise to existence. And existence gives rise to birth. And that's okay. But the problem is, when birth happens, it doesn't stop there. Jati paccaya, jara, marana, shoka, parideva, dukkha, domanasa, upayasa. All of these are characteristics of something that has been born. A young baby comes into this world. From the moment it is conceived in the mother's womb, a clock starts. What clock is this? Death. People don't often think about this. Because why? Because that's negative thinking, apparently. But is this not the truth? From the moment a baby is conceived in the mother's womb, the clock starts ticking. The clock to death. Well, the clock was not ticking before the baby was conceived. It was, you know, either in a previous birth, well, there was a clock ticking there. But as a Gandharva, you know, again there was a clock ticking there. But as now having been conceived, a clock starts ticking. Again, that is not a problem to you and I because we don't have those attachments now. But if you have a child, if you are perhaps intended to give birth to a child, then you've got to accept the fact that this child is going to be dead one day. Whether you die before this child or that child dies before you, where does it say that? Which piece of paper can you go and read that says that, you know, you're going to die on this day and the child's going to die on that date? We don't know that. So either you're going to have to bury the child or the child's going to have to bury you. That day is coming. The only question is whether you're ready for that. So, the problem with paticca-samuppada is the fact that whatever is given rise to, whatever results in birth, is then subject to jara-marana. Jara being decay, marana being death, vyadi being disease. Right? You can't name any object, any person, that is not subject to these characteristics. As human beings, we are all subject to these characteristics. And if you think you've been ill, you haven't even started. You know, particularly if you are young listeners, listen to this. You know, the recently, a few years back, we did a research. There were 30,000 different diseases contracted by human beings. 30,000. How many of these 30,000 have you been contracted with yet? 30,000. And of those 30,000, only 1/4 have cures. So 3/4 of that 30,000 are incurable, because science has not found a solution to that yet. I haven't found any medicine for that yet. When do you, what guarantee can you give to that young child that you're bringing into this world that, you know, they're going to be safe, they're not going to be ill? You can't. Why? Because they have come through the Paticca-samuppanna process. So anything that comes through the Paticca-samuppanna process is going to be subject to that. It's like, think about when you send something from abroad. Imagine you're sending, when you travel overseas, right? You've got your baggage, you're coming down to another country. Whether you like it or not, your bags are going to be scanned. And if you put something in there that is contraband, that you shouldn't be bringing to that country, that's going to get caught. Likewise, if you come through the Paticca-samuppada process, you have to go through customs. You will be asked tough questions. And if you're bringing something you shouldn't be bringing, they're going to take it. You're going to have to surrender it. So likewise, if you're coming through the Paticca-samuppada process, you are going to be subject to death, decay, disease, old age, all of these things. There's no other line. You can't escape that process. The only way you can escape this process is if you put a stop to the Paticca-samuppada process. If you stop flying, if you stop traveling to other countries, well, no one's going to scan your bags. They're just going to be at home. Right? Simple. So that is the Paticca-samuppada dependent origination characteristics of anything that is sankata. So sankata, Paticca-samuppada, shaya dhamma. Something that is the word shaya means to deteriorate. Now there are two meanings that this word deteriorate has in this context. To deteriorate is to go bad, is to become worse in some way. So for example, if you have a wound on your body, if that's deteriorating, then it's getting worse. If you have a sickness and it's deteriorating, then you better go to the doctor soon, if you haven't been already. Okay, so it's getting worse. So if you anything that is sankata, anything that is Paticca-samuppanna is subject to this deterioration characteristic. Why? Because that is the nature of anything that is sankata and Paticca-samuppanna. Because they are the result of conditions. And every moment these conditions keep changing. Every moment these conditions keep changing, and as the conditions keep changing, the result keeps changing. And that's okay. Where is the problem? The problem is when you go and attach to it. So none of these things are problems. I mean, think about an arahant. What is the difference between yourself and an arahant? What is the difference between you and I and an arahant? And an arahant, you know, he still lives in a world that is sankata, that is Paticca-samuppanna, that is shayadhamma, and that is vayadhamma. So shayadhamma being deteriorating, and vayadhamma being something that takes you down with it. That is destroyed at the end. Okay? So, but an arahant does not attach himself to these things. If a house is burning, it's okay as long as you don't run into it. If there's a fire, it's okay that there's a fire as long as you don't go and put your hand into it. It's okay the iron's hot as long as you don't go and touch the hot plate. Likewise, it's okay that the world is sankatai paruchasampanna if you don't go and jump into it, if you don't go and attach yourself to it. Right? So, shayadhamma being the attribute or the characteristic of deteriorating, and so as soon as you attach yourself to that object, what you're doing is you're setting an expectation. I want this to be this way. I want my mother to be free from disease. I want her to live a very happy long life. You now set an expectation. Well, guess what's going to happen? She came through the Paticca-samuppanna. She came through customs. She's going to be scanned, whether you like it or not. If she didn't fly in the first place, then okay, no problem. But she flew. She came into the border, and now she's going to have to go through border control. So if she's come through the Paticca-samuppanna process, she's a result of hetu pala. If she is the pala, then there are hetu, there are causes that has given rise to this result, and therefore she is going to be subject to disease, decay, and death. And if you set an expectation, if you have an attachment to that, then you're going to suffer along with that. The other thing is, where people don't understand the Dhamma, what people tend to do is, as I said at the start, when you're trying to build that house, all you want to do is, I want this to be the best house in the neighborhood, I want this to be the prettiest house in the neighborhood, the biggest house in the neighborhood. Therefore, it doesn't matter whether I go and steal what I need from someone else because I don't have the resources, or perhaps if you go and destroy something someone else's house. You know, say you want to build a 5-story house, you can only manage 4 stories with what money you have. What do you do? You want to be the biggest house in the block. You can either earn the money to build the 5th story, or if there's a 5-story house already, then you go and knock one of their stories down. Actually, you knock 2 of their stories down, and now they've only 3 stories, and you're 4 stories high. So now again, you know, you're the tallest around. You know, when you read about all of these stories, like growing up, you know, think about all of the fairy tales you used to read. When someone wasn't able to be the best, become the prettiest, become the most handsome, what did they do? They went and caused harm to the other person. Think about Cinderella. Right? When the old witch, you know, is thinking she was the prettiest and the fairest of them all. Which one was that?
Snow White.
When that wicked witch wanted to be the prettiest and the fairest of them all, and she thought that was what she was, and then someone else comes along, and hey, guess what? You've got a competitor. Well, you can do one of two things. Either become prettier and fairer. If you can't do that, then go and kill the other person. You know, fairy tales are good enough for us to attain Nibbana. But you've got to be able to penetrate through the color, through the, you know, you've got to think more than it's just a story. Who says Nibbana is far away? A young child who understands this philosophy can sit watching Snow White, and at the end of watching the cartoon, will understand Nibbana, will realize Nibbana. True or false? True. So, Sankata Parisampanna Shayadhanam Vayadhamma. Vayadhamma, so vaya is to reduce in quality. And by that, you will have heard perhaps the word vyapada, which is one of the hindrances. Vaya is something that is characteristic of taking someone to a bad place. I mean, and in the context of the Buddha Dhamma, a bad place is generally to be understood as a hell. Anything that is conditioned has the potential to take someone to a bad place if they do what? If they attach themselves to it and then go and cause harm and damage to other people and other people's possessions. But if you don't do that, then again, that's okay. So as I've been repeating myself several times now, it's okay that the world is Sankata Parisampanna Shayadhanam Vayadhamma. But the problem is not that. Because you can't change that. The Buddha never gives a problem and says, oh well, guess what, you can't solve that problem. That's not the Buddha's way. He gives you a problem and says, here's the problem, here's the cause for that problem, here's how you solve that problem, and here's the path to solving that problem. What's the point of giving you a problem that you can't solve? Pointless. The Buddha doesn't do that. So he doesn't tell us that, oh, the world is Sankatai Patichasampanna Shayadhammai Vayadhammai, oh my god, I don't know what the hell to do with it. That's not what he says. He says, well, that is the world. Understand that the world is like that. But protect yourself. Attachment is what brings you the suffering that comes along with it. So if you stop attachment, if you find the reasons that you attach yourself, which is your delusion, that keeps the ignorance that you have, that says, oh, this thing is of much value, then if you can understand, penetrate through that and realize, no, this thing is only going to bring me suffering at the end of it, then you step away. Recently, when I was reflecting on this, what I felt was actually, I feel myself as being like a rat that's caught in a cage. Imagine you being a rat caught in a cage. A rat cage. Say the house owner has been wanting to catch this rodent that's been eating all his food, eating the furniture, and so he sets a cage up, he sets this trap, and what does he do? He puts in a bait, and the bait is normally sometimes cheese, like as in Tom and Jerry, or perhaps it's a bit of all sorts of things are used as bait these days. You know, sometimes you use bits of coconut. So what you do is you hang this bit of bait in the cage, and then the rat, you know, one night comes looking for food, looks at this cheese or this bit of coconut, thinks, oh, that's some nice food, I'd like to have a bit of that, goes in, takes a bite of that, and snap, the cage is shut. I'm not talking about a trap that actually kills the rat. I'm talking about a trap that actually traps the animal in the cage. Okay, now if you were the rat that's in the cage right now, imagine this as I say this. It's about, say it's around 1 o'clock in the morning. This person set this trap at, you know, just before they went to bed. It was about somewhere like 11 o'clock. A couple of hours later, you're now the rat that's stuck in this cage. The person's going to come along at 6 o'clock in the morning. It's now 1 o'clock. You have 5 hours in that cage. Plenty of time to reflect. Plenty of time to think about, what did I do to myself? Now, because you're in that cage, you're unable to get out of the cage, you are completely subject to whatever this person wants to do to you. So if this person wants to come and gas you to death, could he not do that? He could do that. If he wants to come and chop your head off, could he not do that? He can do that. If he wants to come and burn you alive, could he not do that? He could do that. If he wanted to come and bring a sharp knife with him and slice you up bit by bit until you were dead, could he not do that? He could do that. If he wanted to put you in a bag and slam the bag left, right and center until you were dead, he could do that as well. Or he could just go and throw the cage into the ocean, and then now you're just going to suffocate and die. Well, I feel that I am a rat stuck in a cage. I've got time to reflect. This person's going to come along, and who's this person I'm talking about? Mara. Death. My death is going to come. So I've got plenty of time to reflect. But well, I don't know when he's going to come. He might wake up in the middle of the night and come. So my heart's pounding away. You know, I don't know if you've had the opportunity to sometimes, you know, hold in your hands a little bird that might have been stuck somewhere, and you want to free this bird. And then when you hold it in your hands, you can feel its little heart pounding away. Why? Because this bird is petrified. It's thinking, this, you know, I'm going to die now. This person is going to kill me. If you ever have that opportunity, you know, not to cause any harm, of course, to set the animal free. Sometimes, you know, when... So the other day while we were in the monastery, there was a bird that came and got stuck in one of the mosquito nets that we use. And so I went and took the bird in my hand, and as I held the bird, I could see it trying to get out of my grasp, but I could feel its heart. I could feel its little heart pounding away like nothing I've felt before. And then I could almost sense how much fear this animal has within it. You know, because it's completely under my control now. I could do whatever I like to this animal. I could squash it to death if I wanted to. Could I not? So that's why I feel like a rat stuck in a cage. So I'm in a cage. Mara is going to come and get me anytime he wants. And then he could kill me however he wants. He could chuck a stone or a rock over my head, crush my skull and kill me. Have you not seen people die like that? What about people, you know, who've had an unfortunate death on the roads, you know, crushed to nothing but like a piece of paper, flat as a piece of paper, because a massive, you know, container truck fell over this person's car or something like that. or they could drown at sea, they could burn to death. You know, 101 different ways a person could die, and they never know how it's going to die. But that death is coming. Or it could be a natural death. Perhaps the owner set this trap and he completely forgot about it. Well, you're still going to die. So you've got some time to reflect. The question is, what do you do in this time that you've got to reflect? In the time that you've got to reflect, do you think, okay, I'm now stuck in a trap, but what am I going to eat tomorrow? And when I'm out of this trap, where would I go on holiday? I wonder what my kids are up to right now. Well, they haven't eaten yet. Perhaps I should go and make something as soon as I'm freed from this trap. Or perhaps, all of those little twigs that I brought along to make myself a little nest, make myself a little home. I wonder if they're getting wet in the rain right now. I forgot to put them all inside. Is that what this poor rat's going to be worried about? No, this poor animal's heart is pounding away, not knowing how it's going to meet with death. Because death is coming, and it's just going to be a matter of time. So if I'm the rat stuck in this cage, what should I be thinking? I should be thinking, well, how did I get into this trap in the first place? It wasn't the cage that bothered me, because actually, if I've seen my friends, this is how my great-grandfather died as well. My great-grandfather got trapped in a cage. So did my grandfather. So did my father. They all got stuck in cages, in traps that were set by people. So I knew that the trap was dangerous. Every time I saw a trap, I would walk a million miles away from it. I would run away from it. But, that bit of cheese. Now, that is lovely. That bit of cheese, a bit of cheese, I could never look away from it. Oh no. Give me a bit of cheese and you could get me to do anything for you. Well, guess what you've done to yourself now? That bit of cheese tricked you. That bit of cheese was what got you into this trap. Because you came walking along, having a look around, having a walk about, and then you saw this bit of cheese. And you thought, that's delicious. I need to go get hold of this. Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana. And he thought, I need to get myself some of that. I'm going to go and take some of this. I'm going to go and enjoy some of this. That Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana completely fooled you. It fooled me. This is why in my previous birth, I thought, what if I could be a human being? I could enjoy all the sights, the sounds, the smells, the tastes, the physical contact, all the Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana. What a beautiful world full of these things. Oh, how I wish I could be born again and enjoy all of these things. That was the ignorance that I had inside of me. And guess what? Today, I'm stuck in a trap. I'm in a cage. Mara could come and get me any time now. I have no escape from this. Just my own personal experiences. How many headaches have I had from the time I was born? If all of those headaches you've ever had all came at one point in time, just imagine, all the headaches you've ever had put together one moment, your head would explode. All the mosquito bites you've ever had, if all of those mosquitoes came and bit you in one moment, you wouldn't be able to tolerate that pain, I tell you. All the times where you knocked yourself somewhere, where you've had a bad tummy, where you ate something funny, or your eyes started to ache, you had an itch somewhere, if all of those things came to you at one point, you wouldn't be able to tolerate it at all. The problem is, you don't realize that because all of these things come, every once in a while, and you think, it's just another headache, I'll take a paracetamol, that will go away. But we've been doing that for a very long time. And this is what we do every day. We don't realize that it's this Rupa Vedana Sanya Sankara Vijnana. It's that bit of cheese that got me into this place, into this trap in the first place. Because I was fooled by it. But, you see, the really subtle point I'm trying to make here is, it's not the trap that you need to be worried about. It's not the trap that you need to be scared of. What is it? The cheese. It's the cheese you need to be worried about. It's the cheese that you need to be scared of. So when you see rupa, when you see vedana, when you see sanya, when you see sankara, I'm referring to when you sense these things. Or perhaps in another way, when you can see sights, sounds, tastes, smells, and texture, when you can feel these things. You know, from the moment that I realize that actually I'm nothing but a rat stuck in a cage, all I see around me is fire. All I see around me is fire. If ever I see something that looks pretty, and I'm thinking, I'd like a bit of that. Well, if it was fire, would I want that for myself? No. If I'm looking at some food, and I'm thinking, that's a nice bit of chocolate, I'd like to have that. Or if all I'm seeing is fire, would I put that in my mouth? No. But without realizing this, I'm thinking, chocolate, I'd like a bit of chocolate. What am I doing? I'm creating the causes that's going to give rise to another body. Take me round in samsara again. What if while I'm having that bit of chocolate, I die with this attachment that I have to that taste? Well, guess what? You're going to be born again with another tongue. A tongue doesn't come along by itself. It's going to come along with a body. It's going to come along with eyes, with ears, with a mouth, with this body that for all this time, you know. Ask yourself this simple question. If you were able to exist and enjoy the sights, the sounds, right, the taste, but didn't have this body to worry about, would you not opt for that? Would you not choose that? Of course you would. Why? Because you wouldn't be sick. You wouldn't have to suffer all the pain. You know, you wouldn't be cold. You wouldn't be too cold. You wouldn't be too hot. You know, you wouldn't have a physical body to worry about, but you could still see all the sights, you could hear all the sounds. This is what life is like in the Brahma worlds. I'm not saying go to a Brahma world and enjoy life there. I mean, that's pointless also. But at least it's better than life here. The reason we keep coming back as human beings is because we are still attached to the sense of touch, and the sense of taste, and the sense of smell. Whenever we smell something nice, we want to go and smell more of it. Not realizing that's the cheese that's going to get me into this cage, into this trap. When you taste something, you think, I'd like a little bit more of that. Not because, you know, I'm still hungry and I want some more food, but because I'd like that taste. You're not realizing that's the cheese that's going to get you into the trap. That's the cheese that got your dad into that trap. That's the cheese that got your grandfather into that trap. Well, why are you going into that trap? This is why we need to look at our you know, fellow beings, our elders particularly. You know, look at their lives. Look at the lives that they're spending today. Have they surpassed the physical pain that they have to endure? No, they're still suffering. Old age comes along, ailments, diseases, pain, all of these things, you know, they still have to suffer. And if you come back again with this body and you live to that age, you're also going to suffer. So whenever you see these things, the sights that you think you like and you want to go and see it again, it could be a flower, it could be a cartoon, it doesn't matter what it is. You know, it doesn't matter whether you're young or old, whether you're a young child that likes your cartoon. I mean, a parent might come and tell me, well, you know, Swami Mohansa, you shouldn't be, you know, saying these things to young children. They're only young children. All they watch is a cartoon. Not like, you know, you and me, you know, we go and taste lovely food. And so it's right for you to tell us that, you know, tasting food can give rise to rebirth. Well, makes no difference whether you are young or old. You know, attachment to a cartoon can bring you back into samsara. Is it worth it? So when you know, this is why when as a monk we have this practice where we do pratyaviksha. Before we eat, before we don robes, before we use a shelter, before we take medicine, we have pratyaviksha. So pratyaviksha is where we reflect on, why am I taking this? Why am I taking this food? This food is not to satisfy my taste buds. This food is not to make me look prettier, more handsome, not to build parts of my body so that I look more attractive, for none of those things. It's only to practice this Arya, this path of becoming an Arya, of becoming an Arahant. This is why I take this food. So if you can do that, then whether it's a bit of chocolate or it's a bit of grass, makes no difference to you. If you can sustain yourself on that food, that's all that matters to you. So I think the homework then for this week is to, when you see sights, when you see sounds, when you hear sounds, it could be a song. You listen, you know, you can hear a song, but what if you go and listen to it? Now you are doing action, and that action is going to bring you vipaka results, and that result could be rebirth. Is it worth coming back into samsara because of a song? Is it worth coming back into samsara for a bit of chocolate? If you're going to be suffering, you know, hundreds of different diseases, you know, think of, well, if you've had smallpox, if you had chickenpox, if you had mumps, how much did you suffer? Headaches, when you burnt your fingers, when you got hurt, when you bit your tongue, my goodness. When you got yourself caught in the zipper, how painful was that? You know, all of these are personal experiences that, you know, most people would have had. So, but when that happens, you're thinking, my God, I don't want this again. But then as soon as you see a bit of chocolate, oh, chocolate, chocolate, chocolate. Pizza, pizza, pizza. And then your mind fools you. Then you become the rat. You become the rat that gets fooled by a bit of cheese. And then without knowing, you walk into that trap. The door shuts. Now you're under the control of Mara. Now that Mara can come and do absolutely anything he likes to you, because you're now in his trap. You see, isn't this why the Lord Buddha says, always be within Satara Satipatthana? This is why he says, this is the land of the Father, Piyage Bhumiya. If you always only live within the land of the Father, and he says Piyage Bhumiya, Piya is the Father, and he refers to himself as the Father, Bhumiya being the land. If you live in the land of the Father, and this land is the Satara Satipatthana, the four states of mindfulness, where you constantly reflect on how you use your body. Why am I walking? Why am I sitting? Why am I lifting my arm? Why am I pointing my finger? Why am I putting this food in my mouth? Pratyaviksha, remember. Right? Why am I taking this medicine? You know, when someone else takes some food, does your tummy start to rumble? Well, if it does, then there's a problem. Because they're trying to put out their hunger, and now you're becoming hungry just because someone else is taking their food. Well, then you should then be getting a headache when you see someone else take paracetamol. That doesn't happen. So something is really wrong with you then. That's how our minds work. And that's the cure we're trying to find a solution for. Hopefully this is making sense. So reflecting on how you use your body, reflecting on how your thoughts come and go, is it things that bring you raga, dvesha, moha, desire, aversion, and delusion, right? And what about your vedana, your feelings? Do you feel sukha vedana, good feeling, dukkha vedana, bad feeling, or neutral feeling, which is adukkama sukha vedana? The Lord Buddha says, you know, look at good feeling as painful. Why? Because it's the good feeling that you go and attach yourself to. You see, this is why I said, the Lord Buddha never gives a problem and says, here's a problem, tough. He only gives you, presents a problem and he says, and with the solution to it. This is why he says, this is good feeling, be careful. It's going to hurt you if you attach yourself. Just like he says, this is the bit of cheese, be careful. If the rat was able to just walk past that bit of cheese, ignoring it, or looking at it and thinking, aha, this is that cheese that got me last time, this time I'm not going to get caught, this time I'm not going to become a fool, I'm not going to be a fool and fall into this trap. No trap is ever going to catch that rat, right? But if the rat is going to be fooled by that cheese, then that's it. Completely under the control of Mara. So this is the homework then. the sights, the sounds, the tastes that you experience, the smells and the physical contact that you experience. You know, think about, if I go after these things, when you see something, do you then want to look at it? When you hear something, do you want, then want to go and listen to it? Seeing and looking are two different things. Seeing is a result, looking is an action. Hearing is a result, listening is an action. Tasting is the same. Unfortunately, there are no two words for that. You can taste something when something goes into your mouth. Obviously, you know, something, you're just eating food and then you're tasting it. But that could be just the result of something. But what if you actually deliberately want to go and put something in your mouth and taste it? Now that's an action. And then likewise, you know, you can feel things. You know, you're sitting on the floor right now or on a chair. You can feel that the pressure, or you can feel that it's a certain temperature in this room. But what if you go and volitionally, deliberately want to go and feel something? When you do any of these things, what you're saying is, oh, I feel that taste is a good thing, I want to go after it. You're saying that sights are pleasurable, so I want to see more things, I want to hear more things. And when you do that, whether you like it or not, you're creating the causes to bring you back into this samsara. If any of these objects come to your consciousness at the moment of your death, well, guess what? You're going to fall back into that cage. So I've now shared with you what the cage is like, what got you into that cage, how do you stop getting into that cage, and the steps towards that. If that's not the Four Noble Truths, then tell me what is. So stop being a rat and reflect on how your mind works. This Dhamma is nothing if not practical. 20% sermons, 80% practice. I always say this. So when you get up and walk away from here, when you stop listening to this, you know, this is why I give you this. I mean, I term it homework, but no, I'm not going to mark your homework. But you know, even if you don't do your homework at school, do this homework, and hopefully you won't have to do homework ever again. This homework is going to get you the ultimate happiness. It's going to put a stop to all the homework that you'll ever have to do forever in this samsara. So try and find the time to do this homework. You can do it while you're doing everything else. Okay, so I hope that's been useful. And let us take a moment to confer the merits that we have all acquired in preaching and also in listening this Dhamma to all the devas, the brahmas that we invited at the start, as well as any of the beings that we invited, those who have been our past relations, who may have helped us in the past. May they all rejoice in this Dhamma, may they all listen to this Dhamma, may they all partake in this Dhamma and practice this Dhamma, and may the merits of this Dhamma help them to be born in a blissful plane, if any of those beings are in a woeful plane right now. And once born in a blissful plane, may they be able to listen to this Dhamma and attain the noble attainments that is Sotapanna, Sakrudagami, Anagami and Arahat, and put a stop to this endless rebirth cycle that is samsara, and relieve and bring relief to themselves by seeking refuge in the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. May all beings attain Nibbana.